If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
We're better now today with more competition, friendly competition. You know, the wine community bands together when anything happens, and in our universe, agriculturally, fires, whatever, we're there for each other. And I feel the farming community needs each other, and we need to compete with each other in a positive fashion. I think that's been good for building up Napa Valley.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 497. This week we feature Eric Risch and Tom Rinaldi of Patent Wines, Napa Valley. Likely one of the most important elements of winemaking is experience. Eric Risch and Tom Rinaldi have that covered. Patent Wines is the result of several years in the wine business and some very notable labels to their credit. Never to be taken too seriously, they make some seriously great wine. Best of all is the laughs that come with hanging out with these two. You can also hear Tom on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term Rutherford Dust. In the city of Napa today, with two of my favorite crazy maniacal winemakers today. I'm here with Eric Risch and Tom Rinaldi. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty well.
Well.
Well, that's good. Glad to hear it. Beautiful day. A little bit cooler today than it was a few days ago.
No, it's much cooler than it's been.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting because down here tends to be a little more cooler, right, compared to the rest of the valley.
It does. I mean, San Elena usually has about 10 degrees on us.
Yeah. Real interesting difference for not, 30 miles we're talking about here.
Oh, like a 22-minute drive up. Oh,
yeah, right.
If you don't like the weather, wait a few days and it'll change.
Yeah, that's how that goes.
Had a hailstorm a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
All things. It turned the valley white, really did some damage in Pope Valley and up in Angwin.
Wow.
They got beat up. I haven't seen a lick of trouble in the Napa Valley proper on the floor. And it was in the heart of flowering time for grapevines. But you don't want to see hail at that time.
Mm-mm. You guys don't get a ton of hail normally.
No. Mm-hmm. Rare.
And we'll get snow on Mount San Elena from time to time.
I've seen that.
Maybe in Spring Mountain.
Yeah. Maybe every 8 years, you know, there's enough snow at the top there that everybody rushes up to go sledding on it real quick in the 1 hour before it melts.
Exactly. What I've seen there, it wasn't there that long. Yeah. Amazing. Well, I thank you both. And Eric, I thank you for offering your house today. Very cool of you. We're going to talk about Patent Wines today, which is your new venture between the two of you. And of course, Tom is a winemaker, and then you are partners on this project.
Correct.
But you both have...
Yeah, we've worked together, over a dozen years or so with the Pelt Estate project. And this is our personal new project that we just have taken commercial.
Yeah.
It's all about... patent is a kind of a play on words here. With patent and trademarks is Tom has been in this business for almost 50 years. I think this is your 47th harvest or so. And I mean, he's got his stuff down pat.
So, oh, that's a good way to put it. I thought about that.
Yeah, but it's also about, you know, just the ingenuity in the wine industry that has come before us here. And all of our labels reflect that with old patents from the late 1800s or so. I mean, we've got the corkscrew on our Sauvignon Blanc, a bottling line on our Rosé, and, you know, an old stainless steel basket press, you know, on our Cabernet that'll be coming out in the fall.
Yeah, look forward to the cab coming. Yeah, I like the label. It's funny you'd send me a note just before you guys finished them, and I thought there's a great cleverness to it. And again, part of the idea of not taking things too seriously, that's what I like.
No, we don't take it all that seriously. The wine quality is the most important aspect to us. The rest of it we could just have fun with. It can get kind of snobbish in the wine business, as some people have learned, and there's no need for that. So we take the wine seriously, but the consummation and the what you pair it with, whatever, it's up to you. We don't like to dictate any kind of morals in this business. It's for you to enjoy. It's just a a nice beverage, and you can take it seriously if you like, but there's no real need to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the wine is meant to be just great wine. I mean, everything that Tom does is with French methodology and Tom Rinaldi know-how and acumen, and we produce great wines that are at a great affordable price point, comparatively speaking, you know, within the valley here. I mean, our rosé, I mean, I call it our burger flipping wine because I'm drinking it while I'm out there flipping burgers in the summertime, watching the dog run around, the kids do their thing, and Tom's drinking it at bocce night, you know, during his bocce league. And
I call it my summer wine.
Yeah, I see that. Actually, I've had the rosé, which I really like. I have yet to do the Sauvignon Blanc because we're waiting for warm weather in Wisconsin, which might arrive in July.
In about 5 minutes when you get the taste
of
it.
Good God. But it's an excellent rosé. What I find interesting about it is a very deeper, darker looking rosé. Tell me about that. What is your approach to doing rosé?
Well, it's Cabernet Sauvignon, and we tended to wait just a little longer than you might. Some people immediately, as soon as they crush the fruit, will start to bleed the tank in order to concentrate the amount of skins per volume and deepen the color of the red wine left behind. We tended to wait just a bit and actually to make up our minds whether we really wanted to do this or not. And it was an interesting process, if you will. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's patented, just how we got around to making it. But it's a fun wine. In my early days at Provenance, we had a work order to just bleed it. And that meant get that wine and let it go away.
Down the drain.
Down the drain. And we had a gentleman from Italy who was working with us as a intern. His name was Paolo Rosetto. And he was screaming next door to our assistant winemaker. And I went, what's going on? So I come in here and he goes, you cannot do this. What? You know, and he's showing me the work order. So we go down to the tank and get a little out in a glass. And we're kind of, yeah, it looks nice, cute, you know. And look, Paolo, there's the yeast. There's the tanks. Help yourself, you know. Have a good time. And so he did. And sadly, he went back to Italy before we bottled it. But we were really pleased with it. It was a Malbec rosé. And fortunately, that spring, I did do a bicycle tour in Italy, and I brought a bottle for him. And he didn't open it that day. I was kind of a little disappointed. But about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he sent me an email with a picture, a photograph of he and his father. His father's 50th birthday party, and they have that rosé right in their hand. So it was,
that's pretty cool.
Very touching.
Yeah, that's a real something really appreciation on that.
Yeah, it's fun during crush because I mean we're bringing in lots of cab there, and we've got the triple sort line going, and somebody's up top on somebody's sorting on the incline, somebody's doing the shaker table, the whole cluster's up top, and then you've got the people down below hand picking things out, and then Tom disappears, and you'll see him at the tank at the valve, and he's putting some in the glass. Is like the color sip. No, he comes back and sorts some more, then goes back and stop 150 gallons right now.
Wow. That is a little, I've said this before, you're a bit of a mad scientist, so I appreciate that. I think a lot of people do when you put that kind of passion and work. It goes even a little beyond. Tom is going to pour a little for us just to kind of get a good look at this color, because it is a unique rosé. And we also have our friend hanging out here.
Lucy.
She's a really cute Dalmatian who's just kind of hanging out. So if anybody wonders what the sound is in the background. But let's go ahead and grab the rosé, Tom. And
what I like is a twist off. And we can literally twist it off. Abracadabra.
The master at work.
So, and it's got a, let me just say technically, it's got a Serenex liner, which mimics a cork in breathability. But it does not mimic a cork in the potential of an off characteristic. So there's no need to really, if you're in a restaurant and you bring this along, you don't have to sniff test it. You just pour it.
Nice.
And so that's a wonderful advantage.
And no bottle shock either right after bottling.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Not if it's not cork finish and it's a twist off, you're not going to get the bottle shock. It's ready to go.
That's cool. Look at that color.
It's a lovely color.
Yeah, it really is.
Called our neon magenta.
Nice. I like it.
It's Cabernet Sauvignon, mm-hmm. and it's not likely that you are going to get a rosé from Cabernet Sauvignon. Quite often it's a Grenache or a Pinot Noir, yeah. somewhat that's a little more color challenged, if you will, that they want to really deepen the color of the resulting red wine that's left behind. So this is just a nice little tool for us, and we're going to make it yearly. I'm promising you that.
Yeah. I hope so. I think the color just is, I hate to say this, sound trite, but it's very attractive. It gets your eye. Eric, how many cases are you doing between what you're making in the Sauvignon Blanc as well as the Rosé?
As well as the Rosé and yeah. the Cabernet, right. all put together will be about 1,500 cases on an annual basis. Our Rosé, unfortunately, is a function of our Cabernet production. So as our Cabernet production goes up, so will our Rosé production. But we made about 75 cases of this, about a little over 750 cases of our Sauvignon Blanc, and we're expecting around 600 or so, low 600s of a Cabernet that will be out in the market this September.
Okay, so the both Rosé and the Sauvignon Blanc, I can't see the label for here, so I'm guessing they're 21s. Is that right?
They're both 21s, correct. 21s.
And the Cabernet Sauvignon, is that going to be a...
That'll be a 2020.
2020, okay, cool.
About 2 years in barrel. I mean, the rosé here, all stainless steel, just bright. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, dark color is going to have too big of a body, but it's just perfect cherry berry.
May I ask where in the valley your fruit comes from?
Yeah, well, we're AVA specific pretty much. From all of our wines are AVA driven. And
so the rosé and the Cabernet are Oak Knoll, which is north of Napa and south of Yountville. And the Sauvignon Blanc is
Yountville.
Yountville, yeah.
Yeah, just a little north, just a little bit more north there, right just south of the town of Yountville.
All in the same hood, kind of.
Yeah.
Mm. Great. When you started this up, I know you'd had a previous label, but you've both known each other for a good long time. How did you first meet and get together to do wine together?
Well, I mean, we both lived in town. Tom lived right down the street from me, you know, stone's throw away in San Lena. And we also had a mutual friend, you know, that introduced us and who had been in the Valley for a long time, worked in the industry, and just decided that when Tom was winding down one project, this was an interesting opportunity that was really convenient for him to do and still in town. And that was it.
Retirement didn't go so well after all.
No, I guess many people talk about you that way.
Yeah.
And we're happy that it went that way.
That's quite all right. I read from Tony Soder, he's in the same boat, if you will. He and I were classmates at Davis, along with Mike Martini and Bob Levy and Tim Mondavi. It was quite a class at UC Davis at that time. Kathy Corson's another one. And I was wondering if I really would be getting in the wine business because there's a Rinaldi, all right, but that's over in Italy, and not really associated with me. But that being said, I also had a degree in malting and brewing, so I thought I might be getting the beer industry instead. But the beer industry is the same thing every day. And with the wine, I like to say I've never made the same wine twice. There's a thread of familiarity with the wines that I make from year to year to year with, because I have the opportunity to blend all these fractions, if you will, whether they have some oak in them or a little deeper color or a little more of a tannic edge or maybe even a softer edge, acidity, all these little perks, if you will, of being able to put together a blend is very important in my life.
I think it's also one of the mysteries for a lot of us wine lovers is how the whole blending process goes. But before I go down that path, how many vintages do you have under your belt, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, my first one officially was 1976.
Wow.
So this will be number 47 coming up, if I make it.
You'll make it.
Yeah.
I have no
doubt. All in Napa Valley.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. That puts you in the territory of a pioneer.
There you go.
Yeah, and an icon of the valley.
Yeah.
I like to refer to him as an icon of the valley.
It's a little more younger sounding, isn't it?
Funny, if I say I graduated in 76, they say, is that AD or BC?
Well, they did have wheels back then, didn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, and fortunately, 1976, my first year at Fremark Abbey, was the year that they did the judgment in Paris. So that was a wonderful opportunity to put Napa Valley on the map. We won the red and the white tasting, at least Napa Valley did, over French. And that had quite an impact, especially in France. Mm-hmm. They were very upset
about that's a good thing. It's about time that we got their attention. For you got to look back at it and go, yeah, man, I was there at the right time in the right place. That's pretty impressive. So kudos to you, sir.
Yeah.
So when it comes to blending, which is what I was talking about a second ago, Eric, are you involved in the blending process at all?
I'll sit there with Tom, and we go through the barrels, but Tom's the master. I mean, he has the final say, the final blends, and I mean, the stars align, our palates are very, very similar, and it's just really fun to watch them work, because it'll be this barrel, oh no, he'll be chalking the barrels and tasting, and it's like, yes, no, yes, and...
That's the most important part of the tasting part, is that we assess the barrels first. Mm-hmm. Go one by one by one and give them a mark. Check, that's okay, you know. Question mark? Uh-oh, mm-hmm. Now we got to really start doing some work here.
No minuses.
No, and no, God forbid, X. I haven't had one this century.
That's good.
So, but I'll give them a plus if they're really excellent, a plus. And if they're out of control, wonderful, beyond belief, then that gets the double plus.
Yeah. I get that. But now, I'm curious, not to kind of go dark here, but the negatives, what do you do? Is that something that you do sell off, or you do something
different? No, we might sell it off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We might try to improve it. There's a reason for that off characteristic. Mm. Quite often, it just needs a little more air, let's say.
Or a new barrel.
A new barrel is a good idea sometimes.
Really? Interesting.
And I do the assessment pretty early in the game and then follow up close to the final blend, if you will. So it's a key ingredient. And we have other tools. I mean, I say copper sulfate and there's a legal limit on it. It's quite high compared to anything we might use. I will say we have not used copper sulfate in anything that I've touched in quite some time. But there have been wines that I've inherited in my past life, if you will, that did require some doctoring.
Sure. Well, you have to do what you have to do in the long run. So you're making your wine at Madrigal, which is really right up in Calistoga, just at the 29. Yep. Chris Madrigal, an awesome guy. We did an interview a couple of years back with him. So that's got to be fun. It's real family for you guys.
It is. I mean, Chris, I mean, his family, I mean, they've been just wonderful to us. I mean, it's you're like a small family when you're there, and it goes way, way back. And Tom can speak to his dad in the roots that he
has. I call his dad my godfather. Jesse Madrigal. I've known him forever. And he's always been there for guidance, if you will, for vineyard management, it's been a real blessing to have him in our lives.
And they're really nice people. In fact, the first actual sit-down I did with you was at Madrigal, now that I think about a few years ago, although we'd done a few quickies somewhere along the line. Yeah. Interesting kind of setup to go into this different winery. Again, Chris is a fabulous guy. It's a very comfortable setup for you. It's not...
It's pretty hands-off. I mean, we don't have to micromanage those guys. I mean, I've been at other places where you got to, you know, really watch them, crack the whip, and it's pretty much hands-off from my perspective. Tom's at the winery a lot more than I am, and, I mean, you can speak to that as well.
I'm a nutcase on topping. We lose per barrel, per month, a liter, believe it or not. It just... the angel share, we call it. Mm-hmm. So that needs to be filled back up again, otherwise you start having some serious problems along the way. So I'm meticulous early part of the month. How's it going with the topping? Oh yeah,
they're on it.
We're on it.
That's
yeah.
great. I have to say, one thing I look forward to when I die is hanging out with those particular angels, because I'm going to find them.
Yeah.
Because they got a lot hanging around up there.
Well, they just have the widest diversity of wine samples you ever want.
Just think about that. That would actually make a good novel, don't you think? Yeah. Sorry, I just kind of went down a weird path there.
Yeah, I just want to know what happens to the 61 Petrus angels here. There's still some of that out there.
RMS, they used to collect it. They had a way of collecting it. It was alcohol, basically. It's alcohol and water. So it wasn't really very wonderful, if you don't mind my saying. It was pretty much like vodka, and vodka's neutral spirit. So
interesting.
Let them have it.
Yeah, no, I get that. So you're kind enough to gift me a beer. Is that one you made, Tom, or is that?
No, it's just a local beer.
Okay, no, I'm not talking about that then. Okay, forget the beer. We're not going to talk about it.
Well, you know, like they say in the wine industry, you know, all great wine is made with a lot of beer.
It takes a lot of good beer to make a great wine.
And a lot of good beer to make a winemaker, too.
Well, you know, that was my way of thinking, that's how I got my first job, is that they interviewed about 25 of us, all graduates from Davis. They were going to hire a Davis graduate. And it got down to a final two, Rob Davis and myself. And he came out of the interview. He goes, good luck. You're going to need it. And so I went in with Jerry Looper, winemaker, and interviewed with him for about an hour and a half. And every question was about lab work. And I was working at the laboratory at UC Davis. I was doing, anybody who's trying to get their master's degree or PhD, I was doing the analysis that they would utilize for, you know, backing up their claims, sure, if you will. And so you weren't going to stump me on a question in the lab. So he looks at his watch. He goes, it's 4:30. What are you going to do the rest of the afternoon? I said, I'm going downtown and getting a beer. He said, oh, may I join you? I said, sure. And to me, that's how I got the job.
That's nice. Eric, you just got back from a trip to a number of different locales to sell the wine.
Yeah.
And because you're a small producer, that's got to be a bit of a challenge, because you potentially could sell off the wine and people might go, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's true. But you know, we're in the process of brand building and connecting with our customers. And I never really miss an opportunity to get out and connect with the customers, whether it's, you know, from, you know, a trade level, distribution level, to direct to consumer people. And I mean, and that's true with our rosé. It sold out in 2 weeks, but there was still some left in the. I gave a very small amount to our distributor just for fun, and they had a small amount. And everywhere I went around Florida and New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts over the past couple months here, there's big fan of that, and they're a big fan of the Sauvignon Blanc, and they can't wait to get their hands on the Cabernet that's coming out in the fall.
I'll bet. Now, I've done this with both of you. We could do it again if you want. It's the question. So I'll start with you, Eric. Yeah, I know. It scares everybody.
You're evil, aren't you? You're conniving.
So obviously, you've done your share of media. You've been in the business for a while. You've been asked a lot of questions. But when it comes to an interview, what's the one question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked?
That I don't get asked. Well, it's probably, you know, why are you doing this? I guess so. It just boils down to why, because a lot of people know my varied backgrounds, you know, whether it was from tech,
right,
or before,
yeah,
or this or other. I'm doing this because it's my passion. And when I was in high tech in Silicon Valley, I named my company Grapevine Software Corporation just because of my love and affinity for wine and food, in that order, growing up from a very young age. It's kind of do what you love and the money will follow kind of attitude. And I'm looking for the money to following me. I don't see anybody following me yet, but it doesn't, you know, that's not the whole, that's not the no. point at all. You know, I'm being a little facetious there.
No, but it's a good line. It's a good answer too.
But yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've worn a lot of hats in my lifetime, from, you know, residential construction to high tech, to banking, to real estate. And now, you know, I'm 57 and I'm just saying enough's enough, and I'm doing what I love, and there you have it.
As it should be. Same question posed to you, Tom, although you answered it before. I want to see if you might have a different point. I'm not actually sure if I asked you last time.
I'm not sure either, yeah. But I've never been asked about my honker. Does the size of your nose have any impact on your ability to sense characteristics in a wine by sniffing them? And I'm not so sure about that. But I have been set aside as a super taster, which is the amount of concentration on your tongue. Mm-hmm. And that's another one I've never been asked about, tongue and your sense of smell. My wife calls it a honker.
Well, he's also been put on expert panels because he can smell TCA on cork. So, I mean, he's a real... expert on quart taint.
Parts per trillion.
Yes, yes. I mean, yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
He's very sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he can smell well, too.
I don't smell good, but I smell well.
I don't like the way that Rinaldi smells there.
Yeah, really.
I gotta go. Yeah. But I mean, in the end, too, this is the skill you've built up after all these years. You have this ability your body gives you, or Mother Nature gave you, but it's also your brain and how you connect things, would you say, in the end, that it's something, a skill you've created?
And you hear back from the fans, too. That's the really cool thing. I always like to say I'm the complaint department, but typically I'm getting compliments.
Praise.
And just, you know, wow, that, how did you do that? You know, kind of a thing. So that's what I like to hear. You know, I'm still the complaint department, but it's pretty quiet on that phone.
Yeah, and even when I'm on the road, I mean, people remember meeting Tom, whether it was a year or two ago at some of the events we would go to or in prior decades. And they're always like, I love everything Tom does. And please say hello to him.
That's nice. Most importantly, though, for our listeners who'd like to find out about you guys online, what is your website?
Our website address is patentwines.com, plain and simple.
And if anybody wants to contact you, otherwise?
It's right on the website. It's right on the back of the bottles. It's area code 707-363-3281. Or you can just email us at info@patentwines.com.
You've done that before, I think. It's very nice.
Quite a few times.
Sincerely, hanging out with you two guys is a real pleasure and a privilege. I appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Ray.
Keep up the good work, Ray.
Learn more by visiting patentwines.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.